real-life benefits of telephone and dispatcher-assisted CPR, plus more benefit segments from the EMS World Expo conference in New Orleans this past year. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic. It's always great to have you all joining me this week, and I want to welcome you to this week's show. First up, we have a great interview segment with Christian Adams, Christiana Adams, who actually was a bystander giving CPR to a collapsed man she encountered on a jogging trail. She was assisted by the dispatcher in what she could do to continue giving good, high-quality CPR using the telephone CPR prompts from the dispatcher. Then after that, we're going to go back and check out another special segment from EMS World Expo in New Orleans with a look at what it takes to be a Maryland State Police paramedic on their medevac helicopters. I interview a state trooper about the opportunities available for paramedics in their department right now. Then we'll take a look at one of our product picks from EMS World Expo in our final segment this week. Before we get to all that, though, I do want to make sure that you are checking out the links and additional information available for you all over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. You can also scroll down there to find previous episodes as well. You also use the search box if you're looking for something in particular. We've been on and doing this show for 11 years now, and I'm sure we've covered something you're looking for. So take a look and follow up on the information. But I want you to understand what I talk about each week and how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, make sure you do so. You can always email me directly at podmedic@mac.com. So if you have a comment or a question, just shoot me an email. I love to hear from you, and I do get back to everybody that emails me in with their suggestions, their interview ideas, comments, questions, whatever. I will get back to you, so send your emails now. That's it for our contact information. Just a quick reminder to you to thank Physiocontrol for sponsoring our podcast studio at EMS World Expo back in New Orleans. That's important to thank them. Let them know that you appreciate their continued support of this and other EMS podcasts over the years. It's important to let them know. That's it for our announcements. Let's go ahead and get on into the rest of the show, coming right up. Christiana Adams had been trained in CPR at work, but never expected to have to use it in public, especially in a place like a neighborhood jogging trail. But that's exactly what she ended up doing when she encountered a man collapsed on a trail near her home. Now, she credits the help, actually, of the 911 dispatcher and telephone CPR assistance with helping her save the man's life. Check out this segment about the benefits of telephone CPR from the bystander's standpoint with Christiana, brought to you as part of our ongoing partnership with the American Heart Association. Thank you for being a guest here on the MedicCast. Just so my audience of EMTs and paramedics gets to know a little bit about you, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and where you work?
Yes, my name is Christiana, and I work at Salem Health in labor and delivery. I do not provide direct patient care. I am a unit clerk.
Okay. So, but as a unit clerk, I know in anybody that works in a healthcare facility, from the doctors all the way, you know, to the people that are collecting laundry and things, those folks all really have to learn CPR as part of their workplace requirements. I'm assuming that's the same for you?
It was definitely the same for me. From the time I was hired, I had to have my CPR certification.
So you recently, I mean, you had your regular CPR certification, but you recently were part of a program implemented in your facility with the new RQI, the Resuscitation Quality Improvement Program, that gives regular CPR training every 3 months to keep people fresh on their skills. Tell us a little bit about how you felt about this program when it rolled in. What were your impressions of it as you started doing this?
when Salem Health presented the staff with this new RQI program, I believe it was very well received because they presented it with the evidence that through this training, we would be more prepared, more confident. They presented us with the statistics of how much knowledge and skill that you lose over time. So I think getting the update or the recertification every 3 months, I think everyone could see the benefit from it.
Now, how did you do with that? I mean, you just recently had your, I think you said what, you told me before we started doing this interview that you had a regular 2-year certification cycle was just about 6 months before, and then this new program came in where you had to do it every 3 months. How did you do on that first round of the new RQI program?
Oh my gosh, I did so terrible. It was embarrassing. I'm glad I was alone when I did it. As I was doing the compressions, the program is interactive, so it tells you that you're not doing the compressions deep enough or that your hand placement is correct or incorrect and the speed at which you're giving the compressions. So I actually fell 3 times in a row before I actually got it correct. And then 3 months later, when I went to recertify, that knowledge that I had got was right there with me. I was like, this is where my hands go. This is how deep it should go. This is how I'm going to, the speed that I'm going to deliver them at. And I passed the very first time around with, I believe, like 97%.
Now, you didn't just have this as like a training that you never were going to use again. This was actually something that's surprising to you. You actually came upon a situation where, as a bystander, you had to administer CPR. Tell us a little bit about what was happening that led up to that event.
Oh my gosh, it was so amazing. Actually, I had just done the RQI machine on Sunday, and then on the following week, on Tuesday, I was jogging along a trail, and as I came around the bend, I saw a man down, and his friend was kind of cradling him to the ground. And so as I jogged onto the scene, my very first question or response was, have you called 911? And the guy said yes. And he was starting the compression. He had already checked for the pulse and followed the instructions of the 911 operator. But of course, the operator can't see the quality of the compressions or the breaths. And I was able to jump in and provide those compressions at the right depth and speed and with the right hand placement.
Because of the training you just recently had, what, 9 days before?
Yes, isn't that amazing? 9 days before. It was fresh in my mind.
It was very fresh in your mind. So you actually did such good compressions that you actually had the patient begin to regain consciousness because of the high-quality compressions you were giving. And the dispatcher was very helpful there as well. Tell us what was going on and how the dispatcher assisted you.
I had no idea that this was even possible. But as we were giving him CPR, the gentleman actually started to kind of cough and to attempt to communicate to us. And we immediately stopped CPR because in our minds, we're like, what? He's back. And the 911 operator actually said, no, you need to check his pulse again, check his breathing, and advised based on that to continue doing the compression. And during that moment where we had stopped, the guy that was down actually slipped away again. His color went back to this bluish gray, and he became unconscious. And as soon as we started doing those compressions again, then the color came back to him again. He became conscious again, and he remained conscious until the AED machine had arrived. And then we had to stop the compressions again. So we actually saw his color come back and he became conscious again solely based on these compressions that we were giving him.
Wow. Now, the AED came in. Was the dispatcher any assistance to you to help get the AED applied and go through that process, or was that something you were comfortable doing on your own?
The AED was delivered actually on the opposite side of me, and I was on the opposite side trying to remove. The gentleman was wearing a heart rate monitor, so I was kind of preoccupied, but the 911 operator was walking through the steps. Although I will say, having that AED machine was really great because it also talks to you. But she's like, open it up, press the button, it'll tell you what to do. So I think it was a combination of everything, the training, the 911 operator keeping us on track of what to do. She also thought that first responders on the scene, all at the same time. That was, I'm not sure how she managed to do all of that at the same time. Her world, I'm sure, was pretty crazy too.
Yeah, the dispatchers have a way. Actually, I'll tell you the secret. The secret is there's more than one dispatcher. So you're talking to one person. There's somebody else doing all the dispatching in the background that you don't hear. So.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a common mistake. That's something that people, we try to train people that don't get frustrated if you're talking to someone on the phone thinking they're not helping and getting help there because someone else is listening to the whole conversation and passing that on to first responders. So my last question for you here is, you know, what are your thoughts as you've talked to other people about this? What do you think about telephone CPR, that dispatcher-assisted CPR? Do you think that's something that anyone can do with that assistance?
Oh, absolutely. The operator seemed to, if she was right there with us, as things would happen, she knew exactly how to get us to keep going. Like when we stopped giving him CPR, she was right in there to tell us, no, give him those compressions, or, you know, yes, it's time to breathe. Time to breathe again, because it's hard to keep counting on your own as you're giving the compressions. And so she has a good idea of the time frame of what we're doing. She seemed a lot more aware of it. So I felt like she kept us right on track.
Excellent. Well, Christina, congratulations to you, and I think thanks are due from the first responders in your community for being that bystander. We can't do our jobs without people like you out there learning CPR and trusting in the dispatcher instructions that come in on CPR to save those people, because you have to start the process so that we can come in with our defibrillator and finish the process and rescue them. So thank you.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Next up in our episode, we have two segments recorded at EMS World Expo. The first is a look at the unique job opportunities available for paramedics with law enforcement agencies like the Maryland State Police. Check it out. Then after that, we're going to have a look at a new virtual reality technology that might be coming to an EMS continuing and initial education setting near you. It's my pick for the show as the most innovative EMS product I saw there. Check out these segments coming up next. Hi, Jamie Davis from the MedicCast here at EMS World Expo 2016. We're here in the Physio-Control-sponsored podcast studio, and I'm really excited. I got a chance to squeeze in a little extra segment here with Trooper Bill Jansen. And Bill, thanks for coming on the show. I was happy to see Maryland State Police Aviation here recruiting paramedics from around the country, so welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it. Maryland State Police is very happy to be here. It's the first time we've traveled this far to recruit paramedics, and it's a great show, and we're doing pretty well.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about your background and what you do as a flight paramedic in the Maryland State Police system.
Sure. I've been a paramedic for 10 years. I started off on the eastern part of Long Island, where I was a volunteer EMT, then paramedic, and also a chief of an agency, and just decided I want to go a little bit further with my paramedic career. I had an interest in getting involved in law enforcement, and at the one of the EMS Today conferences, I met a recruiter from the Maryland State Police, and he led me down the path of where I am today, doing the flight paramedic for the State Police. So I have a lot of passion for the job. I really enjoy doing it, so that's why I've continued to down that road of recruiting, and that's why I'm here today.
So Maryland State Police is a little bit different from some of the other medevac transport systems out there in that you are a fully sworn police officer in the Maryland State Troopers. but you also are a medical provider at times.
Absolutely. We do a bunch of different mission profiles. We do medevac, search and rescue, law enforcement, homeland security, and disaster management. Our program is very unique in the fact that any given day, you could be on a police mission, you could be on a search and rescue mission, or you could be on a medevac mission, or a combination of all those in one shift. So there's only a few other programs that kind of do that multi-mission platform, so to speak, but it's definitely an interesting job.
Now, how many helicopter stations does Maryland operate around the state?
We have 7 sections throughout the state, and that allows us to get a medevac helicopter or a police helicopter to a scene within 20 minutes anywhere in the state, which is very, very good coverage compared to a lot of other programs. Some programs have to wait a pretty long time to get a HEMS unit available to them. So we're definitely one of the biggest models in the country for medevac operations.
And I really like that because different parts of the state offer different things. I mean, from the mountains in Western Maryland, where you might have a rescue situation involving somebody on a steep cliff or over some kind of an incline that needs to be hoisted, all the way out to somebody Chesapeake Bay, and you're doing search and rescue there in a water environment.
Absolutely. You kind of hit the nail on the head there. Could be out in the mountains rescuing somebody, or be out in Ocean City and getting somebody that's lost in the surf. And that's another reason why it makes it so interesting, because there's just so many different things you can get involved with within the state police, number one, and also with our specific operation, you never know what specific mission you're going to get on any given day.
So, Bill, what's the profile of the paramedic that Maryland State Police is looking for right now? Who is that person? I mean, I'm sure men and women.
Sure.
You want to look both directions. There are a lot of great female troopers I know.
Absolutely. Men and women, everybody, come one, come all. We want motivated, experienced paramedics. You don't have to be a paramedic, join the Maryland State Police ranks. You could come in and just be a state trooper. We're here specifically looking for experienced paramedics, but if you have a desire to be a law enforcement officer, a state trooper from Maryland, we can absolutely assist you in that as well. One thing that's really nice about the Maryland State Police is that we have approximately about 50 different specialized units. So whether you want to be a canine, you want to be in our underwater recovery team, or our dive team, our SWAT team, there's so much room for expansion, and whatever you want to do in your career.
And I have to say, as a person who's grown up in Maryland all my entire life, the Maryland State Troopers are a well-respected law enforcement agency within the state. I always looked up to the troopers I knew in my life and continue to. So I think it's a good opportunity for someone to get involved with a good organization from the ground up.
Absolutely. It's a very welcoming agency. Like I said earlier, I came from New York. I haven't looked back since. I've been here for 7 years. It's been a great career so far. I'm really excited to see what is going to be brought to me in the future years. And what I can say to all the folks out there is that if you're looking for a challenging career, a very rewarding career, and have a lot of fun, this is definitely the job for you.
Excellent. And also, just real quick, just the medicine you guys get to practice. I mean, you guys are on the cutting edge, so to speak, in some of the things you are able to do within your protocol. And you work right alongside the docs at Shock Trauma, one of the preeminent trauma centers in the country. So that's got to be pretty exciting as well.
That's one of the biggest things that I like about this program, is the relationship that we have with the doctors and the nurses and all the staff at Shock Trauma specifically, but all the Maryland hospitals. We know them on a first name basis. We're able to follow up on patients that we bring in. We get a lot of learning ability there. They follow up with us, we follow up with them. If there's a really good case that's in the actual unit that we didn't bring in and they want to show us something, there's a really good relationship there. I've never had that before in my EMS career, and that's one thing I can say about the Maryland system that I really enjoy.
Yeah, excellent. So last question, where can people find out more information if they want to apply, or just find out more about what Maryland State Police is doing?
Okay, so we have a website. If you go to mdsp.org, or if you go to our Facebook page, you can get a link there as well. The Maryland State Police Aviation Command has their own Facebook page, and also the Maryland State Police have their own Facebook page as well.
Excellent. And I'll make sure I have links to all of that in our show
notes
so that they can just click the link right on my page. But Bill, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys having us.
All right. And I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here from EMS World Expo 2016. We're in New Orleans, and we're here in the Physio Control Podcast Studio. We'll be back with more. So check out this channel for more segments just like this. Hi, Jamie Davis here from EMS World Expo 2016 in New Orleans, and we are here in the Physio Control Podcast studio, and it's finale time here. It's the last day of the show, and it's time for Chris and I and some of the other folks here in the booth to show off our picks. It's my turn in this segment, and I'm really excited to bring Scott from Distance CME and Robert from VES, which is Virtual Education Systems.
That's right.
And start off with Scott. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell folks a little bit about Distance CME, and then we'll move over and talk to Robert.
Excellent. Thanks, Jamie. My name is Scott McConnell. I'm the Vice President of EMS Education for Distance CME and OnCourse Learning Corporation. And what we really do is live online EMS education, making it really, really convenient for you to keep your certification without missing time from work.
Excellent. And so, Robert, tell us a little bit about yourself and VES.
So, I'm Robert Moore. I'm the CEO of Virtual Education Systems. I've been teaching, you know, students for about the last 15 years. You know, I got my start in the United States Marine Corps. I was a medic with the bomb tech team. And we did all this great training. We had all these great simulators. And so I got out of the Marines and went back to school and began teaching at Texas A&M with, you know, patient simulators. You know, one of the difficulty that I had was actually getting multiple students around a simulator at a time, or better yet, my availability for my students. And so for the last 5 years, I had been looking for a solution that was virtual, that I could, something that I could push out to all 500 students that I dealt with, so that they could manage a patient case the way you would in the real world. And then it would then give me back a report saying, well, Jim did this, and John did that, and Janie did this. And I couldn't find a solution, so we decided to build it. So I got together with a gentleman from DreamWorks, formerly of DreamWorks, and we built a virtual patient environment that allows you to go in as an individual. It's all web-based, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It allows you to manage the patient the same way you would in the back of an ambulance. So all the questions are there, so you can interview your patient. Every assessment option is in there. Every treatment option is in there. So instead of going through a check seat in front of somebody, you can actually go through a real virtual patient and manage that patient like you would in the real world. Not that you have to go through this step, and then you go through that step, and then you go through this step. It is, well, let's try some albuterol. Well, that helped, but it's not enough. Okay, let's add some, you know, Atrovent. Well, that was great, but his sats are still, you know, in the low 90s. What else are we gonna do? Well, let's go ahead and give him some epi or something else that will, you know, manage our patient. These are the real decisions that we make in the real world. Yet in the simulated environment, everything is very scripted. Well, we've taken the script out of it and said, look, manage your patient. Get your patient's vital signs normal. So that's what we're doing at Virtual Education
Systems. So it's very nonlinear. I mean, you know, every medic has their own style.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do everything in the same order each time. As long as everything gets done, that you're dealing with the pertinent negatives and all the other things,
well,
asking the right questions.
And if he's from DreamWorks, you should be working on ogres and donkeys and anyway, just even.
Right?
Sorry, that's probably a license violation.
It's coming.
Pretty sure.
Well, no, but I tried it on, and I've tried some VR stuff. I've tried the Oculus before. Mm-hmm. It made me sick to my,
I know, 3D stuff makes me
And
vomit.
So when I went over to see it, Scott said, you have to come over and see this. So I went over, and I saw it was VR goggles, and I went, okay, well, I won't look through them. And he made me try it. I had no motion sickness at all.
Really?
And it's much more responsive, much more realistic, so that it doesn't give me that sensory disconnect that causes the motion sickness.
Because you're moving, not the scenery. Unlike rides at Universal, the scenery is moving to give you that sensation. You're moving your head and the scenery is moving with you versus the scenery moving and you're not moving. Oh, that's what gives you that disconnect.
Set up, and we're going to actually have some video laid over this that you're going to send me, so everybody will be able to see this on the segment when we edit it. But you know, you're looking around the room. You're looking at the patient straight ahead of you, but I can look over here and see what's out that door, and I can look over here and see what's over there.
Right.
And I can look up and I can look down and I see the entire environment. So if there's something going on that maybe I might need to pick up on, tell me something about this patient that I can't figure out what's going on, maybe there's a clue in the room. You know, so and it's scriptable, so the point is every instructor can create their own scenarios.
That's correct.
Really?
So
I don't need to know how to program and just tap. I mean, you can just.
That's right. So we've built a back end that we give, you know, instructors access to. And it is literally a bunch of bubbles and drop down menus where you select the rhythm, you write what the heart rate should be, all that stuff. So it is very, very user friendly. So because I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, you know, I needed something easy. So when we built this thing, well, I was the test pilot, right?
Nice.
And so I would go in there and see if I understood the logic or how you could develop a case. And if I can do it, well, quite frankly, anybody can do it.
And can you interact with the patient? So when you script it, can you write, can you write dialogue for the patient?
You can write dialogue for the patient. And so the way it's written right now, so if you want a particular question in there, you go in, you can write the question, and then every one of our answers, so you ask the patient a question, well, you need to have an answer from the patient, right? Everything is recorded. If we don't have a recording of an answer that you need, send me an email. It'll take me about 15 minutes to do the recording. I'll throw it in the system, and in about 30 minutes, you'll have the answers that you're looking for.
Oh, nice. Amazing. So what type of special equipment do you need? Is it something that you sell, or is it something I can buy off the shelf and plug into my Xbox?
That's a really great question. So we're actually delivering two different models, one that is web-based, and then one that is virtual reality. So to do the virtual reality stuff, you have to have the HTC Vive, you know, headset,
right?
And you have to have a gaming computer that's pretty powerful. It's got a great, you know, has a good processor and all that good stuff. They're about $1,600. The Vive itself is about $800.
Okay.
So it's not terribly expensive, but if you can't afford that kind of equipment, we deliver the same cases, better yet, Scott delivers the same cases at Distance CME online. So you can go through all these cases online.
And it's a 2D environment, the gaming environment would be, where you'd have to look around the room, move around, the patient's there.
Use the mouse to move, right,
3D
exactly,
experience,
right.
But it still gives you the same scenarios in the 2D environment.
Interesting. So what have you seen from students that use it? Have you seen more, are they more competent once they're done?
Absolutely. We're really looking at this in a two-model type of format. So the first one being, right now, a 48-hour paramedic refresher, as an example, is broken down into 24 two-hour segments. At the end of every segment, you have a 10-question quiz. You know, you have to prove competency. And,
right.
I mean, let's be realistic. Many years in EMS education, a multiple-choice exam is a multiple-choice exam. If you have a modicum of brains, you're going to get at least
You've
a 70.
You've probably seen that question before.
Yeah.
Right?
Or you can go, well, that's not it, that's not it. So I'm 50-50 here.
Right.
Well, how does that really prove that you have clinical competency and have critical thinking skills?
Right. I'm a good test taker. That's it.
You're right. Exactly right. You're just a good test taker. Well, how about instead if I get rid of that multiple choice question test and give you a 15-minute patient care scenario? So we just talked about pediatric asthma, pediatric respiratory, and pediatric intubation. Well, you now have a pediatric patient that you now need to manage.
Right.
The system. And at the end, it demonstrates clinical competency, and it also helps you with your critical thinking skills because it's not linear. It's not, I have to do this and this. You can do multiple things at the same time. Manage the patient versus A, C, D, okay, I pass.
Right. Well, and I think VR has become really important in the airline industry. I think, so my question is, how do you engage because a lot of VR and a lot of, you need to engage your all of your senses, your tactile response and all of that to really remember it. How do you engage that with a mouse and a keyboard?
So as the equipment becomes more prevalent, and we actually had this conversation because, you know, the HTC Vive is $500 to $800.
Right.
I mean, as a typical paramedic for a really long time, I'm looking at $800 going, I don't think I can afford $800. But, and then of course I pulled out my $800 iPhone. Who do you know that does not have a smartphone?
Right.
PlayStation next week is coming out with their VR for their PlayStation, and this works on that as well.
Interesting.
In fact, there it is.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
So if you want to do Google Cardboard, it works.
That's crazy. Turn that way and look at the patient.
And Google Cardboard,
he's crying.
$15 allows you to take your phone, slip it into the Google Cardboard, and it's 3D with your phone.
Wow.
So we have options. I mean, you know, everything new always costs a little bit more.
Right.
It is what it is. I mean, 10 years ago, who would have thought you'd pay $800 for a cell phone?
Right.
It's the standard now. As this hits the gaming market, you're going to see that this is now the standard.
Brilliant, brilliant. This is great.
As computers, you know, increase, well, then you're going to be able to add things like, you know, it's maybe you'll smell something, or, you know, it already has audio, it already has visual. Maybe they'll have gloves that you put on that stimulate you feeling their skin or something like that. But, you know, that's a little bit an add-on, an extra down the road.
So say you don't want to do the VR anything. Well, that's fine, but you're sitting in your rig, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you don't really have anything going on. You can do the case just on your phone.
Nice.
Just like that.
And can I get credit for this as I do it?
And that's the second model.
Right.
So the first model is
I want to play with it, but I probably shouldn't.
The first model is we use it as a testing component. The second model is, since each one is 15 minutes long, let's bundle four together, and you get an hour of Con Ed by doing four patient care scenarios.
Right.
And we've already talked to the national credentialing body, and they're like, oh, absolutely, this is wonderful, we love it.
Nice. And does that count as an actual, when you certify a national registry, part of your time has to be actually doing some patient care.
Correct. So this would be F3 or distributive education, not live.
Oh, okay.
Because now if I bundle it with an instructor to help you walk through it, then it's a live educational scenario.
Excellent.
Versus I just do it on my phone in the truck at 2 o'clock, then it would be not live distributive education.
And Distance CME does do the live via the internet training. I mean, that's how I recerted last time. The easiest research cycle I'd ever done.
Wow.
I did a couple hours. Yeah, I did a couple sessions a week, and in like 8 weeks I was done.
Nice.
You know?
Very nice.
So it worked out really well. So this is my pick. I'm really excited about it. I think a technology thing, it's a great as an educator, I'm excited about it. As a paramedic, I'm excited about it. And so this is my pick. DES teamed up with Distance CME to give us a better way to learn and a better way to research. Awesome. Where can people find out more information? So I guess we should do that too.
Sorry, I was like, why are we? I felt like we're.
It's a good way to wrap up, and then I was like, hey, we haven't told you where to find it. So DES.
You can find us at Distance CME.
So go to DistanceCME.com.
Go to DistanceCME.
Correct.
Excellent. All right. Well, Scott and Robert, thank you.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brilliant.
Pleasure.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Nice job.
And I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here at EMS World Expo 2016 in New Orleans. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, with Chris Montero, the Geeky Medic, and these guys here for our pick of the show. We want to thank all of you for checking this out. And remember to thank Physiocontrol for their continued support of our podcast studios at this conference. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or Facebook at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, scene safety, BSI.